as I said last time, you know, we're not putting on a show here. I know this is early and we want people to come out, but we're not putting on a show. We're actually breaking down some foundational issues to prepare us for a great work for God. And as we do that, we wanted to start out rightfully talking about manhood. We're talking about men stepping up and being leaders, as they should. And so we covered that last week, and if you weren't here, it was a blessing, and you might want to pick up one of those CDs on your way out. Yes. We talked about getting your man card back. We talked about being God's man, a card-carrying, legitimate God's man that can do something real on this earth for God. Today, as we promised, we're going to cover the other side of the ledger. We're going to cover the women, the fairer sex, as they say. And I'll just give you a preview. Upcoming, we're going to talk about who God is, who he really is, not who we say he is, not who the world says he is, sometimes not even who the church says he is, but who is he really? So once we understand who we are as men and women, then we're going to begin to understand for sure enough who it is we are worshiping, who we are living for. And then we're going to talk about faith. Knowing who God is not good enough. You've got to have faith in God. Hebrews 11 says, to come to God, you must first believe that he is. But a secular humanist gives that. But you must also know that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So we're going to learn what that really means so we can be ready to be armed for God. And we're going to talk about finances. Money certainly answereth all things, but you can't serve God and mammon too. So we're not serving the money, but we're going to understand how money can serve us as we endeavor to do work for the Lord. And we're also going to talk about leadership. Now, obviously, those of you who know me from Kaiser Permanente know that I know just a little bit of something about leadership. God told me I would be a leader of leaders, and he has blessed me to be a servant leader and to make a difference in many, many lives. And so we're going to talk about leadership, and we're going to wrap it up with another couple subjects as we lay down this foundation, and those other couple subjects we're going to do based on what appears to be needed. So last time, we talked about manhood. We talked about how to get your man card back. We talked about in order to qualify for a man card, you needed to be a God-hearing, God-fearing, understanding your leadership role and accepting that responsibility, and a wife-loving, appreciating, honoring, protecting, action-oriented man. And I did say action-oriented because it's not good enough just to hear God. It's not good enough just to know what he has said. But we must also agree with God. And even once we agree with God, that's still not enough. It means nothing. It doesn't go down in the books unless you act on what God has said. And so we learned about what a real God man, God's man, is all about. And so we promised that we would balance the ledger, and we will. And so today we're going to take a little more time. This subject, as you might imagine, is a bit more complex. We're talking about women now. And I know you women and you men would probably agree the ladies, right, Carmen, are a little more complex. And so we're going to do everything that we can to leave you late, to have you ladies leave here today more prepared, hopefully, and more willing to do what God would have you to do. So last time I said that, and it's true, that women are God's gift to mankind. And that's true, and we're going to learn a little bit more about that gift today. We're going to learn a little bit more. We're going to go deeper in our understanding of the fairer sex today. But as we look through the text, we're also going to look at it from an angle you probably haven't looked at it before. I'll reveal my text in just a few minutes. But just understand, we're going to cover several levels of this issue of the woman. The woman is complex, and we're laying down a foundation, and so we're not going to leave anything undone. And so we're going to take our time this morning. We're going to take our time. And the other thing I will point out to you, and I'll tell you my text, is, you know, mostly found in Genesis chapter 3. There was a crime committed. A crime against humanity. And we're going to really investigate this crime. We're not going to peer from the outside of the yellow tape. We're literally going to go underneath that yellow tape, and we're going to go all CSI today. We're going to sift through the evidence. Where necessary, we're going to spray that stuff on there that where you can see blood, where nobody could see it and they thought they'd clean it up. Well, you know, we're going to look at chapter 3 mainly, and we're not going to go through the sanitized version. What you're going to find as we look at this, as particularly the King James translators used terminology by choice to create a very sanitized version of the word. But in order to really unearth the truth here, we're going to go to school this morning. We're going to have to go to school, and you've got some places and your bulletins to write notes. And you will be writing some things down today. We're going to go to school. The woman is too complex to do anything else. So we're going to school. Now, in the end, just like with the men, you ladies will be faced with a question, some might say a challenge, and certainly an opportunity. After today's message, you're going to get a chance to decide for yourselves whether or not you truly are ready to be in God's army. And if you're ready, whether or not you're really willing to do what's required of you to help God's army to be successful. So if nothing else today, we will give you clarity. It's your decision to make, but we're going to give you some clarity today on some issues that sometimes we try to get around. Sometimes we try to avoid. Sometimes we try to find an escape clause. But we gave the brothers no wiggle room last week. Is that right? Melvin, you were here. We gave you no wiggle room. Edgar, you were here. We gave you no wiggle room. You needed to be suited, we said, and booted for the young folks. And you needed to be ready to rock and roll for God. You could not be slack in your responsibility. We talked about Eve, and we talked about the fall. We're going to revisit that. We talked about the fact that in her weakest moment, Eve needed a strong God man to say, no, we're not going there. Love you. You're beautiful, gorgeous. You're my counterpart. You made perfectly for me, but you know what? No, my relationship with God is too important. My relationship with you is too important. Now, we don't know what would have happened if Adam said no. Would there have been some special plan to redeem Eve? Would he have gotten a replacement? We don't know. But the problem is we don't know, because Adam was not able to step up to the plate and do what was necessary. And so the obvious subject today is God's woman. But I really derive my focus of what I want to talk about today from woman's actual God-given purpose. It's not good enough just to show up. You've got to have a purpose. And we talked about that in terms of the man last time. So ultimately, can you, ladies, and will you, be a real, actual partner with God's man? Will you do that? Now, we're going to talk about today some things that get in the way of that, but that is really ultimately the question. Now, why do we question that? Why would we think that you might not want to partner with God's man? Well, there's a couple reasons. One, women have superpowers. They have special gifts. And it can cause them to believe that they either shouldn't or that they don't want to partner with God's man. We're going to talk about those superpowers here. The other thing is that a woman likes inside, she doesn't talk about it all the time, but she likes her independence. And so the title of this message comes from that thought. The title is Independent Woman. We're going to cover this issue, and you probably are still wondering, why is he talking about independence? It's because you really, actually have not studied Genesis chapter 3 before. If you're still wondering why I'm talking about independence, we really haven't studied it before. We've glossed over it. It's a nice story. It's a nice cartoon story to talk about the fall of man. So we're going to talk about this independent superwoman today. Now, what sort of superpowers does a woman have? And these are supposed to be to the benefit of her partner, as she was created to help him, as we covered last time. Well, she's intuitive. A man can see very concretely what is. He's real good at it. And he'll tell you very concretely, he'll describe it in concrete terms. But a woman can see, as Pete Carroll used to say, the spaces between the spaces. She can see what's up before it reveals itself to be obvious. Can you imagine how that might be a help to God's man? To have an intuitive woman who can scope things out ahead of time before they're obvious if God hasn't already said something. And so this is a superpower that a woman has. But when we talk about these powers, what we're going to talk about is whether or not, ladies, you're going to use those powers for good or for evil. You're going to use those powers for God's glory or for your own. Are you going to use those powers to build your man up or to break him down? Are you going to use them to help him or to subvert him? The choice is going to be yours. But we're going to look at these superpowers at work. The second superpower that a woman has is multitasking. We're not talking about just doing multiple things. A woman can literally attend to multiple things. She can actually pay attention to multiple things. A man can focus on a football game and nothing else can get past him. Nothing else can get through. The lady can watch the game with you. She can cook. She can talk to you. She can be on the phone with somebody else. And she can still hear the kids in the other room if something's going on and still remember to tell you to take out the trash. That's a woman. Superpowers. Are you going to use them for good or for evil is the question. Now finally, and there are other powers, but these are the three I'm pointing out, the power to influence. The woman has special abilities to get someone to do what she wants them to do. Okay? Now she doesn't have to flex any muscles. She doesn't have to pull a gun. But a woman has a way of getting people to do what she wants them to do. She has a specific power of influence. A man has to flex his muscles. He's got to talk loud. He's got to have some sort of weapon. Woman, she just comes with that. She's just got it like that. And so you would imagine how that could benefit God's man. You could also see how it could hurt God's man. And so we're going to talk about this independent woman, and you'll find my text in chapter 3. Verses 1 through 6, and we sort of covered this last time, but I left some things out, and I told you I would, because we needed to deal with the woman today. And then we're also going to go over and touch on verse 16 in chapter 3 as well. And so in terms of a roadmap, how are we going to go about doing this investigation? I'm going to give you the background. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about this relationship before the woman's declaration of independence. We're going to do that for you. And then we're going to observe and dissect and sift through the evidence in this case. We're going to be CSI agents, like I told you. We're going to go to school because it's necessary to really pull out what's going on with this woman. We're going to understand exactly what happened and why. And then we're going to talk about the consequences of the actions. Yes, they had consequences, and we sort of know what those consequences are, but I'm going to tell you something. We're going to talk about the stuff that's not talked about very often. And then we're going to put forth the challenge to the women as to whether or not you're going to use your considerable powers for good or for evil, and whether or not you're going to really partner up with God's man. So I want you to write down three words for me. The first one is knowing. Okay? There's a reason why these words matter. It's because of their true meaning, which is going to pull out the true meaning in the text. And these are also words that, especially the King James and other translators, chose to use, interestingly. And because these words can have multiple meanings, we tend to gloss over and we tend to accept and we tend to think the most sanitized version. And if we look past the English word, we'll actually find out what the original intent was. The second word is desire. And this word is actually found a couple times in the text, as well as the third word, sorrow. Write that down. Sorrow. Okay? So, now, before Eve's declaration of independence, things were going pretty good. God created man from the dust. He said, hey, I've got this beautiful garden for you. I just want you to tend to it for me. I've got a purpose for you. A man without a purpose is nothing. I want you to take care of this for me. And I want you to be a leader. Name the animals. Actually, you didn't even tell him to name them. You just put them there, and Adam knew to name those animals. And the Bible says, whatever Adam said, that's the way it was going to be. Because he had that authority. But God, being the wonderful God, big-hearted God, caring God, saw that man shouldn't be alone. He needs, the King James says, help meet. Now, we covered that. That confuses people. What's a help meet? Well, help simply means aid. Even when you translate it, it's still simple. Aid. Okay? And the meat is appropriate, an appropriate aid for him. And if you look deeper into that word, however, aid, it's really talking about a counterpart, a right glove to a left glove. Looking for someone who could match up with him, who would look like him, who would roll like him, and who could give him the kind of companionship he needed. And so it's no surprise after he went for his slumber and God took the rib that he woke up and said, woo, hallelujah! Look at what God has done. Look at this gift from God. Flesh of my flesh, bone of my bones, like me. I will call her woman because she came from man. And then it goes on to say that man will therefore leave his father and his mother and cleave unto his wife. Now, any of you guys know what that word cleave actually means? Cleave is not a word that we use here. Obviously, the King James uses a lot of sort of old English terminology. That word cleave actually means to cling. So he's clinging to his wife. Now, hopefully modern day women, get rid of those thoughts in your mind. Clingy, I know that's what you're thinking. Oh, he's needy. Oh, I let him go back to his mother if that's what he wants, right? No, clinging, staying close. They should be tight like that. If you're going to rock and roll together and do something for God that's meaningful, you need to be tight like that. And Adam and Eve were just that initially. But the other thing I want you to recognize, however, is that Adam was all giddy. She just showed up on the scene, has done nothing for anyone yet, and she already has him giddy. Advantage Eve. So this is the introduction that Eve gets. And we talked about last time, most likely Adam sort of walked her through the garden to say, hey, this is the deal. This is that tree. This was particularly delicious. That one's really wonderful. I like having that one on Sundays. I need to tell you one other thing. This is important now. I need you to listen real carefully because I love you. I want you to be protected. There's just one proviso, one issue. See that tree right there? God said don't touch that. God said don't eat from that tree. If we can handle ourselves properly, we're going to be all right if we can leave that tree alone. And so Adam was a leader. Adam was a hearer and a fearer of God. He was action-oriented. He followed through and told Eve what he was supposed to. He didn't just think it. He didn't just agree with it. He actually did it. And he loved his wife. And so Eve gets this big party thrown for her as soon as she comes on the scene. Now, we won't say that she got the big head or anything like that, but we will say that she wanted to be an independent woman for some reason or another. But even an independent woman, and even a woman with superpowers, has a kryptonite. And we're going to begin to see that shell break down. We're going to begin to see what this kryptonite looks like, and that's what brings us to our text. So if you have your Bibles, please open them to chapter 3 of Genesis. Should be easy to find. It's the first book. So let's go ahead and I'm going to read verse 1. We get a new character here into the story. He is the serpent. He is Satan himself. And the Bible says in the King James Version, "Now the serpent was more subtle, more crafty, sneaky, than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, Hey, hath God said ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" Did he really say that you couldn't eat from every tree? Did he really not? I don't know. Did that Adam guy really tell you the whole story? Would God hold back on you like that? Come on. No. Surely not. Are you sure? Now, that's the initial reading of that verse. But I'm going to take a little license here. I'm going to take some personal license based on what I know of the word and what I know of situations and what you probably will also identify with. Now, up to this point, this is the only tree they couldn't eat from. And it's in the center of the garden. So just based on geometry, this is the tree, no matter whether they were trying to go east, west, north, or south, they're more likely to pass this tree than any other tree. Now, it's also the only tree they couldn't eat of. Now, you're going to tell me all this time, up to this point, there weren't conversations about this tree. I promise you, there were some conversations about this tree. Well, you know, did he really mean? No, what do you think would happen? I don't know. You want to try it? No, our God said you'll die. No, you know that this tree was a source of intrigue. This tree was like that Coach purse, sorry, Gloria, in the Coach store that's so beautiful, but your credit card only has that much credit left. And that purse is going to cost about that much. And you know you shouldn't max your credit card out. But man, it's enticing. And so you go, you just swing by. Honey, I'm going to make a couple stops on my way home. Okay, you just go and look at it. Oh, I wish I had that. And you wonder how you got there 3 times a week. You wonder how you got there. But it's natural for us to wonder. The curiosity, the intrigue is not a sin. It's understandable that Satan probably came upon Eve while she was in one of her pondering modes. Man, that's a beautiful tree. I wonder. And so I just want you to entertain the possibility that Satan didn't just drop out of the sky, bring the subject up out of the blue, and this was on a neutral template. I don't think it was neutral. I think she was vulnerable. I think that she was in a position of vulnerability because she was really curious about this tree. And we're going to talk about this independence. I want you to notice that Adam is not around. Okay? Now, you may say, well, how does that, what is that? That's Adam's problem. It's Adam's fault. We beat him up all the time. I know my wife does. We beat him up all the time. Where is Adam? He's not on post and he's not on point. Well, I think he's not around by design. We're going to see by what Eve does next. You wouldn't want a card-carrying, God-fearing, God-hearing, wife-loving, leadership-accepting God man around. You don't want that guy around. He's going to talk you out of that kind of stuff. He's going to say, no, 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 no. We need to be on point. God's given us everything. How dare we spit in his face that way? So no, you don't want that man around. No, no. You need, when he's taking a nap, when he's at the ball game, when he's somewhere else. And so Satan finds the woman and he sort of plants this seed of doubt in her mind. And the other thing I'm going to point out, and we can't spend too much time on this, but in the end, after Eve does what she does and God steps to her and asks her, what in the world have you done? She said, well, the serpent tricked me. And we don't have time to go through it, but that word that's used, that's translated into beguiled, actually can mean some other things. And frankly, if you dissect the situation, it's more of a seduction than a trick. He doesn't trick her. What he does is he reaches in and pushes a button. He activates something that was already ruminating, simmering, tenderizing. She was already curious, wondering about this tree, but he's going to take her past curiosity. And we're going to see that happen. We're going under the tape right about now. We're going under the tape. Verse 2 and 3 together. And the woman said unto the serpent, well, we can eat of the fruit of pretty much every tree in the garden. I mean, God's given us plenty. But the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the garden, God said, no, you should not eat it, nor shall you even touch it. You know when something that you shouldn't do, a place you shouldn't go, someone you shouldn't be with, if you get close enough to touch, it's too late. Too late. And it doesn't even have to be a physical touch. You all know what I'm talking about. There's things that happen on the job. There's things that happen in situations. And you know when you've gone too far. There is a point of no return. But God said, you can't touch it. And we know, based upon this, that Eve had the head knowledge. She understood what God had said because Adam had told her. And so, at this point, I want you to notice, I told you I'm going to cover multiple layers. Okay? At this point, I want you to believe and understand that Eve, in her independence, is engaging this man, serpent, on a very touchy, sensitive, and intimate topic without her man around. That's bad news. That's trouble. Ladies, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it. And so she's got the head knowledge. So far, so good. Let's look at verse 4. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. Short verse. Loaded verse. So, first of all, he's telling her, all right, you got this head knowledge, but I think you're vulnerable. God lied to you. Adam lied to you. You're not going to really die. He's lying. Secondly, he's telling her what she wants to hear. The anatomy of a seduction. First of all, the kryptonite for a woman is attention. He gave her attention. He paid her attention. He noticed her. Hey, hey, I could have talked to that dude, but I'm talking to you. Notice you. Second of all, he tells her what she wants to hear. Oh, man, my man never tells me this stuff. He would have told me, yeah, we would die. He's been telling me that all along. I like how you talk. Oh, yeah. So, he tells her what she wants to hear. And so he says, ye shall not surely die. That's not the punchline, though. He's not done yet. He's got her attention. He's got her listening carefully. Okay, really? I might not die. I might not live to see the consequences of the action of the disobedience. Well, Satan goes ahead and says, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be open, and ye shall be as gods. That gods is in the Hebrew Elohim. Anything in the Hebrew that starts with El, that's God. Elohim is simply multiple. The choice that they made here was to describe it like gods, as if to be pagan gods. But frankly, Elohim is often used to describe the Godhead as well. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And so either way, the point here is that if you eat of this tree, your eyes will be open and you shall be like gods, knowing good and evil. This is where we really gonna go to school. See those words that I had you to write down? First of all, let's talk about this knowledge. If we go back to chapter 2 very, very quickly, verses 16 and 17, this is where God tells man that you can eat of every fruit of every tree, but you just can't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That knowledge is knowledge that someone else would give you, that you might read, that you might come to know from a third party. That knowledge in the Hebrew is da'ath, head knowledge. But that's not the kind of knowledge that Satan is enticing Eve with here today. She had the head knowledge. What he's talking about here is actually comes from a Hebrew word, yada. This is not head knowledge. This is knowledge where you get to see for yourself. Not what Adam tells you, not what God says. This is experiential knowledge. This is, I know that I know. I know because I've been there. I know because I've done that. This is a very different kind of knowledge that she seeks. And here's the other thing that Satan is doing here. He's saying, you don't need Adam to tell you what's wrong. You don't need God to tell you what's wrong. You can know for yourself. You can be truly independent. Let me tell you what else he's saying here. Anatomy of a seduction. You want to seduce a woman? You want to ruin her life? You plant the seed of doubt in her mind. You start to make her question whether her man really means her good, whether he wants her to be all that she can be, or whether he's just keeping her down. And then you tell her he's insecure. God just wants to keep you dependent on him. He just wants you to keep you dependent on Adam, where Adam has to tell you his instructions. You are a wonderful, independent woman. I see your potential. He doesn't see your potential. I see your beauty. I see your potential. So he says here, I'm not making this up. He said, God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, your eyes will be open, and ye shall be like gods, knowing. Meaning knowing for yourself good and evil. You don't need him anymore to tell you what to do. So this is enticing to Eve. She's already been curious. He's made her, he's put her on a pedestal and made her feel real good. Her man's not around. Maybe her man didn't tell her the whole story. He didn't tell me the story like this. He didn't say, man, I'll be able to do my own thing. I want to be independent. My man's not around. I'm doing all talking about this intimate, important subject with this dude that really is telling me what I like. And he's telling me if I eat, then I'll have everything I need. I'll be completely equipped, knowing for myself good and evil, willing and able to rightly divide whatever situation on my own. And so at this point, Satan has done his job. He doesn't have to do anything else. He's already got her attention. He's already got her. She's not, Gloria, at the store and looking in the window. She's in the store, and she's got a bag in her hand. It's over. It's over. No, we have not taken the credit card. We have not done the transaction, but it's over. In verse 6, what we're going to see is a rationalization. Sometimes we think that when someone rationalizes, they think themselves into or themselves into doing something. Absolutely not. Rationalization is the excuses that you make and rehearse after you decided to do it already. That's what a rationalization is. And so Eve at this point has made up her mind. The case has been made. You know, she's convinced, man, I could do this all on my own. I get to be an independent woman, and I know I got superpowers. This guy's all giddy and clingy. He wants to be close with me. God created me all special and stuff. you know, he couldn't do without me. He had to call me in. I got it made. And so in verse 6, it reads as thus. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and it was pleasant to the eyes, I'm going to stop there because I don't want you to give this any meaning or significance. Because if you go back to chapter 2, you'll see that God created all of the trees that way. They were all pleasant to the eyes and they were all good for food. There's nothing special about the fact that she's, okay, it's good for food, and it looks beautiful. That's not new. She could have had every other tree if she wanted to. But the punchline is the next point. So it's good for food and pleasant to the eyes. This is all part of rationalization. Notice she used stuff that everybody knew already in a rationalization. This was so far not an excuse to eat from this tree. But, and a tree to be desired to make one wise. She wants to be wise. She wants to know for herself. She doesn't want to need God, and that's her thinking of being wise. This terminology actually can also mean prudence, circumspect, to be able to look at a situation and sort of scope it out, know exactly what to do. This goes beyond intuition. This goes into judgment, the ability to know what to do once you get there, not just how to get there. Now, this goes to the second word I asked you to write down, that is desire. We're going to deal with this a couple times here. This word, desire, is tava. It can also be pronounced tava. And this is not, as you read this, you think, oh, what, desire to have wisdom. It makes sense, right? This word, no matter how often you look it up, and just, you all might want to look it up, V-A-H. This word is translated desire. They could have used lots of other words if they wanted to, but this is the sanitized version. It means passion, longing, not just nice to have it, not just wanting. It almost always carries with it. Look it up. Google it. It always carries a negative connotation, often a moral connotation. But it always means passion, longing. She didn't just want this wisdom. She didn't just want the ability to be on her own and do her own thing. She passionately wanted it. By this time, it's over. That purse, she can smell the leather. She can feel it. It just feels different. It's not like those other purses. And she's like, woo! She could just imagine wearing it. I didn't even know until recently that you wear a purse. I thought you carried a purse. That's a man's thinking. It's a utilitarian way of thinking. It's a practical thing to carry stuff. What? It's not a part of wardrobe? I guess it is. And that's why you have to have shoes to match it. Now it all makes sense. I get it. But I didn't. I'm a man. What can I say? And so we have this woman with these superpowers, and she's on the verge, the precipice, if you will, of the greatest tragedy ever. She has intuition. She's got that power, but it didn't keep her from this. She has a multi-track mind. You guys who like to go to Best Buy, by the way, I know you do. A few years ago, we had these simple chips in these computers, and we thought that was great, and then the Pentium 4 came out. And he said, what's so special about that? Oh, you need to have this. Well, you can do multiple applications. You can have them open at one time without slowing the computer down. Men can do multiple things, but not as efficiently as a woman. You won't even know. You won't even miss a beat. So she can do all of that, and yet Satan knew her weakness. She can multitask, but she had this one guy, and she could not avoid the wiles of her enemy. And the issue of influence, we see her kryptonite here because she is being influenced. Why didn't she convince Satan that, hey, wait a minute, you're trying to get me to fall for the same trick that you fell into. You want me to fall into the same pit that you fell into. God had given you everything and it was not good enough. You wanted to be God-like. You wanted to take that throne. You wanted to call the shots. It wasn't good enough that you were the angel of light. It wasn't good enough that you had that prominent position. No, you want to be God. I'm not falling for that. That's your problem. Nah, he knew her kryptonite. He knew how to get her attention and make her feel good and break down her man, tear down her man, tear down her God. It's over at that point. If that conversation goes that long, it's over. All that's left is the excuses and the pain and the sorrow to follow. And so she's rationalized up to this point, and she wants this wisdom. She has a passionate desire for this wisdom. And so she took the fruit and she ate it. We know that. But then another tragedy occurs. Even though she is not at her best, she's actually at her worst. She still has special powers. And so she goes to her husband and she says, "Dear, you ought to eat this fruit. You know, it's really all right. It's okay." No, God says, "No, really, come on now. It's okay. You can eat it. I did. Go ahead." Now, this man should have a backbone here, but we know that he didn't. And if you wonder if he ate it on his own and he didn't have help from her, all you have to do is look a few verses down. When God told Adam that he was upset with him, he said, "Look, I am punishing you because you hearken unto your wife." That means she told him some things. That means she was using her power, her considerable power of influence, to get her husband to do something that he absolutely should not have done. Now, women, you are powerful this way. But there is nothing humanly more powerful than a card-carrying, God-hearing, God-fearing, responsibility-accepting, woman-wife-loving God's man. When God's man is at his best, you can't touch him, because it's more of God and less of him. You know what? I hear you. Good proposition. I'll be right back. I'm going to get more God. Because right now, I'm feeling enticed. I'm thinking, man, I got to sleep with you tonight. You're going to bug me. If I don't listen to you, you're going to really make my life difficult. But sometimes we do fall prey to loving the one we live with more than we love the one that we live for. And so Adam had this proposition here, and unfortunately, we know the decision that he made. It's not the decision that's ideal, but how many of you have done the same thing? How many of us have done the very same thing? So women, as you can see here, you certainly have considerable powers. And you have the option to use them selfishly or for the greater good. You can use them to fulfill your purpose of partnering up with God's man and doing a great work for God, or you can tear him down. You can be his friend or you can be his enemy. That's up to you. And at the end of this message, we're going to give you a chance to make that decision. And so we know he ate. And we know what happened after that. Their eyes were open and they knew, yada, they knew for themselves what the deal was. Woo, I'm naked. So when God said, "Who told you?" He knew if you ate from the tree, nobody had to tell you. God didn't want them burdened with that. Fear, hiding, shame. God gave them everything blissfully. They didn't have a worry in the world, but it was not good enough. Eve had a card-carrying, God-fearing, God-hearing, leadership responsibility-accepting, action-oriented, God-loving, God-man. That was not good enough. What's wrong with us? Wasn't good enough. It needs to be good enough. Maybe it wasn't sexy enough. I don't know, but It needs to be, it's God's provision, and therefore, it is always enough. So they're hiding behind the trees, and God talks to them and sort of jams Adam up. We covered that last time. And then he turns to the woman and says, "What in the world have you done?" And I told you that she said, the serpent beguiled me. He tricked me. He did not trick her. He basically tapped into a spigot that really wanted to flow anyway. The passion that she had for that independence, not wanting to depend on God's man or God. So now that the crime is done, we're going to hold Eve over in custody for a preliminary hearing while we think about what should happen. So we look at verse 16, and it reads, "Unto the woman he said," this is God speaking, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow, and thy conception in sorrow thou shalt bring forth children." Now we're going to school again. Let's look at this word, sorrow. Now, these are very difficult words to pronounce in the Hebrew, okay? But the word sorrow that's used here initially, right here where he says, "Unto the woman," he said, "I will greatly multiply thy sorrow," that first sorrow. I've got to look at this one because it's really hard to pronounce. I'll have you write it down. It's I-T-S-T-S-A-B-O-U-M. And it's basically itzabon. Itzabon, I know it sounds funny, but that is the Hebrew word that's used there. And actually, if you look it up, Google it, feel free. It always has a leaning towards mental anguish. This is not physical. Okay? This is mental, psychological vexation. God, when he meted out these punishments, he made the punishment fit the crime each and every time. And he described it. In this case, Eve, because you've used your considerable special gifts that I gave you to benefit your partnership, I'm going to turn this on you. You have the ability to attend to multiple things at once. Now, you're going to have vexation. You're not going to have the choice whether to pay attention to those multiple things. You're going to worry about stuff that you don't want to worry about. The man will have blissful eyes, fine, whatever, rolls off his back. You're going to hate him for that. You're going to hate him for it. And actually, the root word that ultimately gives rise to this particular word actually is most best translated worrisomeness. Worrisomeness. So yes, you've got this great power and you used it for evil. Guess what? I'm flipping the script on you. Now you're going to be bothered and bugged. And sometimes, unfortunately, when the lady is so vexed by this gift that's turned on her, she turns it on you, man. We call that nagging. She doesn't mean, well, sometimes she does mean to nag at you, and that's not when she's at her best. But these things bug her. "Oh, we need to take care of that. Have you done this? What about this? What about the kids? Oh, my God." And you're like, "Oh, it's going to be all right." She can't help it. She can't help it. It's part of the punishment. These things will not go away, brothers. Okay? God covered up our sin, but the consequences other than ultimate salvation still remain. Okay? So, we have this sorrow, this mental, psychological vexation. And then he goes on to say, yeah, you're going to have pain and conception. You're going to deliver babies. It's going to be painful. I wasn't planning it that way, but you know what? That's the way it's going to be. And then he goes on to use this, they translate this word desire again. "And thy desire shall be to thy husband." Now, going to school again. Now, we talked about that word desire before, that tava, that passion, longing. This is similar, but different. This word is teshukah. I know it sounds weird, but Hebrew words sound weird to us. But this actually means a stretching out for, a need for, a longing for.
This does not necessarily imply passion, but it implies you reach out, you need them, you want them. And so women, this guy, this God man that I gave you to protect you, to love you, to honor you, he wasn't good enough. So you broke him down. Guess what? This man that you feel like you can run circles around mentally and otherwise, you're going to need him when you don't want to need him. You're going to want him even if you don't want to want him. You're going to end up, unfortunately, in relationships you shouldn't even be in just because you just need that affirmation. You started out this, I am woman, see me roar, independent woman, and guess what? Now, you're not going to tell it, but you're going to need him. You're going to need a man. You're going to want a man to say you're beautiful. You had one that told you, flesh of my flesh, bone of my bones. That wasn't good enough. So guess what? You're going to need it, and you're not even going to get it like you need it. Going to flip the script on you. What else did he say? He says, your desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. Oh, man. Wait, independent woman, rule over thee? You kidding me? That woman wants to be the boss to start with. He's going, what? Rule this dude? All I got to do is smile and bat my eyelashes. He'll do anything I say. And he's going to rule over me? No way. Well, this is God talking. So, here's the deal. You wouldn't accept the partnership that I offered you. It wasn't good enough. So he's actually going to have dominion over you. And we know in general society that has been the case. But we're talking about the intimate relationship here. And so Eve is stuck with this worrisomeness, this pain in conception and childbirth. She's reaching out and needing and wanting someone that she feels superior to and doesn't want to want all the time because she wants to be an independent woman. And now he's going to rule over her. How do you like them apples? Does that feel good? How does it hit your ear, ladies? He's going to dominate, rule over you. God is flipping the script. So here's the deal. We see what Eve did. It was wrong. We see what she did to the man. That was wrong. We see what the consequences are, and that's tough. But now let's talk about, and then God. God came in for both Adam and Eve, and they had their little fig leaf things. That wasn't enough. That represented their own shame, their capacity for shame. But God said, I'm going to cover you up. I'm going to cover it up because I don't want you to see your sin, and I don't want to see it. So I'm going to cover you up right proper. With the word translated in the Bible, actually, the original, it's more a tunic. It says coats in the King James, but it's more of a tunic, a full length dress to cover it all up. And so, given the fact that we serve a loving God, a forgiving God, a caring God, even though woman used her considerable powers for evil, God still loves you. God still cares. And you know what he did for you? He made it possible for on this sin-filled earth for us to have card-carrying, God-hearing, God-fearing, responsibility-accepting, woman and wife-loving, action-oriented God-man. I said earlier that woman was God's gift to man. But this card-carrying God-man is God's gift to you. Question is, the second time around, will you appreciate it? The question is, the second time around, will you see your considerable role in God's plan as good enough? Will you see God's call to you as something worth doing, something worth committing to? If the president called you, you would come a running. And you would happily do, and brag about it, you would happily do whatever he wanted you to do. And so the issue now is, what will you do? Will you commit to using your considerable powers
for the purpose that they were meant? Will you?
What's up?
Will you? That's the question on the table. Are you going to actually be in God's army?
Let the church.
Not alone, but with your God man. Every woman, if she's not married, should be seeking, daughter, a God man. And you know I'm tough on that issue. I want the best for you. I am never going to compromise on that. You are God's gift to me. I'm not messing that up. I'm not going to sit idly by and let anybody else mess that up. Card carrying, God hearing, God fearing, responsibility accepting, action oriented, God man, ain't nothing better than that. Anybody that starts to try to convince you otherwise, not yellow light, red light, stop. Don't let anybody seduce you. Don't let anybody whisper in your ear and tell you what you want to hear. Don't let anybody tear your God or your God man down in your eyes. Immediately you should be offended, and it should be obvious to that person. If you're not, if you don't stand firm there, they're going to see the weakness and they're going to get you, just nudge you right into that place that your internal passions already wanted to go. And so, for all the ladies here, I hope that we took you to school enough. I hope we broke it down well enough for you to consider what thus saith the Lord. I hope it was clear enough for you so that you know exactly what God's woman needs to be. Your place in this dynamic duo is secure. It's special. Just because a man is the leader does not make you less than. And here is the other thing I'm going to tell you. Not only is God's man a gift to you, God's man has the heart of God. And even though the curse made it so he could dominate you, he wants to partner with you. That's the heart of a God man. Think about this. He doesn't want to dominate you, even though that's what God said could and should happen. So a God man wants to partner with, he wants to cleave unto you. He wants to partner with you. He wants to love you for what you are with your considerable gifts while you respect the fact that he is God's man and that he has gifts. And most importantly, his greatest gift is relationship with God, that closeness. He walked with God before you ever came up on the scene. And it's only when he lets go of that that he's going to have problems. Part of your job is to remind him of that. Part of your job is to be the wind beneath his wings and the voice in his ear saying, it's going to be all right. God is with us. If you said this is what God said, then this is what we're going to do. But if you insist on being an independent woman, you're going to get the consequences of that independence. If you just have to know for yourself, and you don't want to be linked up with a God-fearing, God-hearing, card-carrying God-man, then that's on you.